For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the Juice on the Cues podcast, a Thursday edition, March 7th. As we take a look back, Wes, Syracuse forgot its hall pass on Tuesday. That's the best I can put it. Oof. Wes Chang and Matt D'Agostino here with you. That'd be a PJ hall pass for those not following my very elementary
wordplay
and humor at this point. 90-75, Clemson beat Syracuse in the Orange's regular season finale. And they're left to kind of stew with this one for a little bit, Wes, because they've got the rest of the week off until the ACC tournament starts next week. But a 15-point loss to Clemson, and it got away from them early on with PJ Hall scoring 21 in the first half, including 16 of Clemson's first 25.
Yeah, this to me is a game that Syracuse, they weren't really quite ever out of it. Like, they were never down like 20 or 30 points, but they were never, as you said, they were never really in it. So it's just a bad matchup for Syracuse. You mentioned PJ Hall. I mean, the guy's 6'10", 240 pounds. And then you have, you know, Ian Sheffin, who's 6'8", 238, and he pulled down 16 rebounds. So easy to talk about their size, but I also think they have a disciplined offense that knows how to find its shooters. And we got to see Joe Girard for four seasons at Syracuse, and I think the frustrating thing about him was the wild out-of-turn three-pointers he took when he was with the Orange. He doesn't seem to do that for the most part in the Clemson system. 21 points, 4-for-7 from downtown, that dagger four-point play that really put the game away with about 4 minutes left. So, you know, tough way to end the season. Definitely a huge blow to Syracuse's NCAA tournament chances. Their resume right now, 84th in net with only two quadrant one wins. So, you know, I think that was a really golden opportunity that they blew on Tuesday night.
Yeah, we talked about it the last time we were on. It was going to be very telling where Syracuse's season may go pending the result of Tuesday's game. So you're right. It wasn't a blowout from beginning to end. There were a lot of runs in the first half, especially where Clemson gets out to a big lead. Syracuse comes back. Then Clemson extends that lead to 12 at halftime. I read a stat. Not good. Syracuse, 8-for-18, not from beyond the arc, on layups. That's a telling stat right there that they didn't shoot all that poorly. They were fine, although Chris Bell wasn't heavily involved in the three-point arsenal on Tuesday. But going 8-for-18 on layups, that's going to be a big difference maker. You know, typically you think you would make at least 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5 on those. And that's, you know, that's the difference of 8 or 10 points just right there, depending on how you get that. But ESPN broadcasters, Reese Davis, Sean Farnham, Sean saying, you know, Syracuse looks like a tournament team. They passed the eye test. And Reese was very, very poignant in pointing out, you know, they do. The resume hurts them. And I've been a stickler on this all season, Wes. Another double-digit loss. They're averaging in their 11 losses, they're losing by an average of 17 and a half points. I think that's very a very big indictment of what their resume looks like, especially now with that loss. You look at the ACC standings and they go from fourth, and now the best they can do is fifth based on a myriad of scenarios that could happen the rest of the week.
Right, Matt. So Jim Stickschulte does a great job in his article on Wednesday breaking this down on the Juice Online. I'm not going to go through all the scenarios, but you just mentioned Syracuse can finish anywhere from fifth to seventh. So the two games to watch this weekend, Clemson at Wake Forest, NC State at Pitt to close the season. The main things here are, and I'm just going to do two scenarios. One, if Clemson and NC State win, then Syracuse is the number five seed. So that's the best case scenario in terms of where they finish in the ACC for the regular season. If Wake Forest and Pittsburgh win, Syracuse slides down to the number seven seed. Again, there are a couple other scenarios where Syracuse ends up as a sixth seed, but I would just highly recommend you read Jim's article on the site. But I think if you are a Syracuse fan, which if you're listening to this, you probably are, what you have to look for is you want NC State to win on the road at Pitt, especially because NC State currently 83rd in net. If they rise eight spots, that's a third quadrant one win for Syracuse, because on the road, Syracuse beat NC State. And again, a top 75 net team will net you a quadrant one win. That gives them a shot to finish fifth in the ACC, as I mentioned. So I think that's really the bottom line, is you really want to be looking at that NC State at Pitt game. I think it's really important for Syracuse.
Yeah, and not that it's a left turn from what we've been talking about all season, but one of the better wins of the season for Syracuse had been that road win at Pitt and sweeping Pitt in the regular season in both matchups. We've been saying, we need Pitt to win. We need Pitt to win. That'll make Syracuse's resume look better. Now, also having swept NC State, now Syracuse fans are going to have to be Wolfpack fans on Saturday to make that happen. Again, it's crazy how all of that twists and turns. But, yeah, you're looking at
to your point, Matt, you know, Syracuse beat Pitt, as you mentioned, and we started rooting for them, and we rooted, and it worked, because they are in the top 50 in net. So their top 75 status is cemented, which is why it's okay to root against Pitt now, now that they have the net resume that we want them to. And again, we want NC State to have a similar net resume, which is why we kind of flipped our rooting allegiances, at least for Saturday, as it relates to Syracuse's slim NCAA chances.
There you go. So make sure you wear your Wolfpack red on Saturday if you're watching ACC hoops over the weekend. So, yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to stay in that top four for sure, get the double bye. You'll get one bye, and we'll see how it all shakes out to see what the road through the ACC tournament looks like for Syracuse. But, you know, I'm imagining at least a couple of wins, maybe to get to the final or even win it to take all the guessing out of it. But I'm assuming a couple of wins are going to be necessary for Syracuse to get any sort of consideration for an at-large bid.
Yeah, I would think that they would need to go on at least a mini run, at least make the quarter. They will be in the quarterfinals, at least make the semifinals, the final four of the ACC, to even have a remote shot at an ACC NCAA bid. Matt, you know, we're through the regular season now. So, you know, Syracuse finishes at the 20-win plateau. So I wanted to kind of get your take on what you think of the job Adrian Autry did through the regular season. You know, a lot of factors working for him, a lot of factors working against him. But if you had to, you know, kind of grade the regular season, what would you grade Adrian Autry's job this year?
I was thinking about this last night, and if I'm a generous grader, not an extremely generous grader, I give him a B. If maybe I'm being a bit more realistic, maybe a B minus, but I think anything lower than that is maybe ignoring what the expectations were coming in. The pros that I thought for this season, one, just getting to 20 wins again for the first time since 2019, it's significant. It may not be enough to get into the tournament this year, but I think it's a significant benchmark for them to get back to that level. I think that's important. I think Adrian Autry in a short time has established a culture for Syracuse and a different identity going away from the 2-3 zone. Although they played a little bit more the last couple of games. But that man-to-man defense, Syracuse, you know, everybody looks at them and says, they've played zone forever. How are they going to play man? Well, they led the ACC in steals this year. Like, they had two of the top three individual guys in steals in the conference this year also. So that's significant. They have established a defensive identity that I think will carry through in years to come. I think, you know, getting through the muddy waters of the Benny Williams dismissal is forming an identity. Adrian Autry, you know, dug his toes in the sand and said, we're not going past this point with you in the program. And I think that's significant. That's not an easy move for a first-year coach to get rid of a five-star recruit that has been in the program for a couple of years. I think that's a definitive stand for him of what the expectation level is in the program, and I think that's really good. And then I think, you know, the recruiting class, not having dipped off with Coach Boeheim leaving, and, you know, it's one of the better recruiting classes, even though it's just got two guys in it next year. Keeping those guys and seeing the potential in the future with the team, I think are all positives. And then you also had a big success with J.J. Starling coming over in the transfer portal, seeing the success he's had, knowing that they can bring guys from outside the program into it and be successful with them. Those are all pros. There are certainly some cons, but I'll get your thoughts on what you thought was good and bad.
Yeah, Matt, I guess I'm a less harsh grader than you are. I think he's on the borderline of B-plus to A-minus. You mentioned, you know, the last time Syracuse winning 20 games in the 2019 season. I give him credit for this, too. It's always hard following a legend. It doesn't matter whether it was Bobby Knight, Mike Krzyzewski, Dean Smith. There's always going to be, you know, that really hard look from fans that says, well, you weren't the last guy. You know, what have you done for us lately? So to get to 20 wins, I think, is really important. I think it's a milestone for him in his first year, especially given the early non-conference schedule that he did not make. And he was really successful just navigating through the ACC season. So a couple tough losses. I think you mentioned it earlier. They lose. When they lose hard, an average of 17 points. One other thing I wanted to point out is you mentioned, you know, Benny Williams being dismissed from the team. Two guys you didn't mention, Chance Westry, who's a top 40 recruit, 2 years ago, he missed the entire season. Naheem McLeod also, you know, missing most of the ACC season. Now, he may not have been the most effective center, but I think there could have been some games like the Clemson game where Syracuse could have used his size and height. And I think in terms of development, you know, Chris Bell and Quadir Copeland, they really developed throughout the year. Chris Bell becoming an incredibly consistent shooter, shooting around 40%. And then Quadir Copeland, the spark plug off the bench, and he actually knocked in a couple threes, you know, against Clemson as well, showing you the versatility in his game. So I think when you look at the player development there, you look at him replacing a legend, the plateau he got to. And again, you mentioned it, you know, we are at Rivals at the Heartware recruiting website. So, you know, getting McDonald's All-American Donnie Freeman, which happened during the season, adding Elijah Moore, one of the top shooters in his class out of New York City. I think overall, you have to feel good about the direction of the program. Again, the culture he installed. So, you know, despite the losses, despite the fact that they may not make the NCAA tournament this season in the minus category, I think you have to grade him B plus or an A minus. I'll probably give him a B plus, but I think you can make a compelling argument for an A minus.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as good as the 20 win plateau is, you know, it's a little bit of a cut and dry kind of thing. You make the tournament or you don't make the tournament. And that's kind of where success is measured. But I don't know that we would have said they were a definite tournament team coming into the season. So I think they kind of met expectations in that regard. To me, the biggest blemish is the losing by such a drastic amount. I mean, only three single-digit losses on the season. That's the biggest separator for me. They beat the teams, by and large, they beat the teams they were supposed to beat, and they lost to the teams that they were supposed to lose to, and there wasn't as much of a gray area in between. And I think that may be, you know, one of the biggest deterrents for them making the field of 68 this year. So, you know, you brought up a good point, though, in terms of no one liking to follow the legend. I hope you've realized that's why I like to start out each segment talking, because I don't want to be the one following you, Wesley. That's just how it goes down. You know, and I would take that to the bank. But, you know, Wesley, we've got a new sponsor here. I don't know if you've you've heard if you listen to the Juice and the Cuse podcast. And it's a betting sponsor, and that is near and dear to my heart, as you know. I love betting. I love betting against my friends, even. And betting on anything, really. Sports games, who's faster. Again, Wes, not fair. You have long legs. I do not. You win those races. But Cut allows me to bet with my friends, to bet in general. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. It has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo. Maybe we bet on what the ACC tournament has in store for the Orange next week. If you want to do that, you can use the promo code BELIEVECUSE, BLEAVCUSE, the Believe Network, Syracuse Hoops. It all makes sense. Use BELIEVECUSE for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code. Again, BELIEVECUSE, and Cut. Put your money where your mouth is, Wes. You know, and I like to put my money where my mouth is. I don't know. It's a habit. It's a fun habit. I enjoy it, and I don't care what anyone says about it. It's fun. You know what? I don't know if Mike Waters has anything to say about things in terms of the betting world, but he has a lot to say about Syracuse hoops. He's been with Syracuse.com for a long time covering the Orange, and we will talk to him next here on the Juice and the Cuse podcast. Welcome back to the Juice and the Cuse podcast here, Matt D'Agostino and Wes Chang. And we are joined by Syracuse.com's Mike Waters. Well, look, it's been 34 years now you've been covering Syracuse hoops. That is quite the impressive. Don't hide. It's not anything to be ashamed. That's a proud resume booster right there. That's incredible. And Mike, we've been talking about this season kind of in general as the regular season culminated on Tuesday. And I want to start it off. One thing that I've been a stickler with this year, outside of the win against your alma mater, North Carolina, Syracuse has not really been able to hang with the tougher opponents this season. They've beaten, by and large, the teams they should beat and lost to the teams that were favored against them. Why hasn't Syracuse, in your opinion, been able to make the losses closer or make the close losses wins instead?
Yeah, I think you look at it, and this is a team that's got some limitations. And when things don't go really right for them, the wheels can come off the cart pretty quickly. You know, they're not a great three-point shooting team. If another team gets hot from three-point range, how does Syracuse stay with somebody like that? And, you know, I've heard several times this year the coaches, including Adrian Autry, will talk about, threes won't beat us. Twos won't beat us, but threes will. So they really, try to defend the three, run people off the line. But if that's not working, if they're not turning somebody over to augment their offense, the offense can come to a halt and then stay there for a while. We've seen that. I think the other thing too, I think early on in the year, the road losses at Carolina and Duke, and especially the losses out in Hawaii to Tennessee and Gonzaga. Yeah, I remember it was a young team. And I don't think they knew yet at that point in the season how to hang in there and how to prevent an 8-0 run from becoming a 16-0 run. And really, that's the difference between, keeping yourself in the game. They didn't, they wouldn't slow things down and run a good, a half court set. And sometimes they didn't have the parts to run a good half court set, but they wouldn't run that set to make sure they got a good quality shot. And other times, I think in the Carolina game in Chapel Hill, you saw a young team kind of, tuck its tail between its legs, and you saw some, I don't want to say give up, but definitely some let up on the, on the defensive end. But after each of those games, these problems were addressed. They addressed some stuff after that Carolina game. They talk about sharing the ball more on offensively, and you saw them get back on the right track. And after the Wake Forest game, it was an entirely different type of conversation after the game down there. And That wasn't just a, hey, we got to go back and look at some film and we're going to start doing things different. That was a different conversation. That was like, no, we're not going to see that kind of display again. And really, you haven't. They've played the last month much, much cleaner. You know, mostly staying again. Even the game at Clemson the other night, I know the final spread is 15, but they fought and clawed and they kept that game close. You know, they got down by double digits and got it back to 5. They took a couple of daggers from Joe Girard and got back down again by and then they got it back to 8. They were down 8 with just under 2 minutes to go. And that was more fight and more paying attention to the little things than you saw back in January. Certainly more than you saw back in November out in Hawaii, right? So, you know, I think those are some of the reasons why we saw it early on. And I think it's what, you know, why we're seeing it last now. And I think that shows a sign of growth for a very young team. You know, we have to remember, we're talking, they're all sophomores.
Right.
They're all sophomores. There's no seniors here to show them the way. There's not a steady influencing junior even, you know, there's nobody. They're all kids. So they're all learning at the same time.
Mike, Matt and I have been talking a lot about, is Syracuse an NCAA team? Are they not? I know you get asked this question a lot too, but it seemed like Clemson was a really golden opportunity to pad their NCAA resume. And that was kind of what I described as high noon for them in terms of being able to make it to the tournament. One, do you think that really torpedoed their chances and they've got no shot? Or two, aside from winning the ACC tournament, do they need to win 2 games? Can they get in potentially with 1 game? Put on your bracketology hat for us right now.
I thought before the Clemson game, they needed to win 2 important games. And Clemson represented 1. A road game would have been a quad 1 win. That would have been 1. And if you win that one, you know, that would have given you a shot at a top 4 seed in the ACC tournament. And therefore, that quarterfinal game against whoever it was on a neutral court would have given you another shot at that type of win, right? So that would have been your 2 chances. Losing to Clemson is an opportunity lost, but they still have a chance at those 2 wins. The problem now, though, is, you know, the key is not just 2 wins. It's 2 important wins, 2 big wins. And now that they're not going to be a top 4 seed, they're going to be like 5, 6, or 7. Their first game is going to be against a team that comes out of the first round. And it would be nice to, you know, you try to win the game. Obviously, you got to win the game, but it's not a win that's going to move the meter. It's not a game that, like, is going to boost them, their net ranking or anything like that. So now they really have to win 3 games, at least in my opinion. They got to win that 1 game that's not going to help them, and then they have to win the next 2. And the problem is, you know, one of those is going to be against one of the top 4 seeds in the league. You know, if they end up the 6th seed, it's probably going to be against Virginia. And that's after you're asking a team now that, you know, hasn't strung together a lot of wins until that 4-game winning streak that we saw there before the Clemson game. You're asking them to go to Washington, D.C. and win 3. And that's asking a lot, because the 2 at the tail end of that, those are going to be tough games. So I think the opportunity is still there. I think the likelihood of them achieving it is probably slim, just given the, you know, what we've seen from them now over the 3 months of the season.
Mike, we have tossed this around throughout the season, and at different points, maybe we have different answers for it, but I'm curious your answer to this. Who do you think Syracuse has missed more from last year's roster? Is it Joe Girard, who they've seen a couple of times now this season? Or is it Jesse Edwards, a formidable big man that allows Malik Brown to slot down to a 4 and maybe the pieces fit a little bit better? You could argue both of them would have been awesome to have around. But who do you think they missed more this season?
God, that's a heck of a question. I don't know if I've got a definitive answer for you, because on the one hand, I'd love to see what Jesse Edwards could do with this team. Give you that big guy, you know, at 6'11", almost 7 feet tall. You know, I would still want to see Malik Brown play the 5 a little bit, but maybe not as much as he's had to, where he's full time. And then, you know, if you had Jesse, then it's not even like you have. Yeah, you could move Malik to the 4 for some, and I would like to see that lineup, because Jesse also, you could pull him out to the high post and run offense through him. It's not like he's a center that's going to clog the lane for all your penetrating guards. So I think you could play the two of them together. But, you know, with Jesse on the floor, it means you could also play, you know, those forwards. You know, Chris Bell and Justin Taylor, they, you know, especially Justin might be a little undersized at the four, but does it matter as much if you have a shot blocking presence like Jesse somewhere hanging around? So, yeah, Jesse would have been intrigued. I think I had that question for a Mike's mailbox like a week ago, like how much would it affect? And I'm like, yeah, two or three wins, maybe two or three of the losses. And I, you know, the person initially when I wrote him back privately, he's like, that doesn't sound like a lot. I said, well, let's put it this way.
That's the difference.
How would you like to, instead of being 20 and I think it was like 20 and 9 at the time, how would you like to be, or maybe it was 20 and 10, how would you like to be 23 and 7?
Sure.
I know it's only three wins. It doesn't sound like a lot, but man, it can flip that record. But I tell you what, Joe Girard is one of the best three-point shooters in the ACC. And what's the one thing this team lacks other than a Chris Bell? It's three-point shooting. And I think it's a commodity that's higher valued in today's game than it ever has been before. You know, to lose a guy like that, it affects everything. You know, did Joe have some limitations defensively? Yeah. Clemson's figured out a way around it. Maybe actually playing man-to-man with a bunch of other good defenders around him helps Joe instead of being in the zone where he had to cover space. You know, maybe it would have been fine playing man-to-man here. I don't know. Tough choice. I don't know. It kind of depends on the night and the opponent. Like, you know, who are you playing?
You've reached the same conclusion we have, I think, at this point. Yeah, to be able to tinker with matchups is certainly a fun thing to have at a coach's disposal, for sure.
You know, it's really tough. When Joe has that skill right now, that three-pointing skill, that it's so rare but valued at the college game today. I mean, you look at the biggest difference between the NBA and the college, the NBA has all the best shooters. Shooters play in the NBA these days. And in the college game, not all the college team has as many shooters as you see in the NBA. And if you're a team with only one reliable three-point shooter like Syracuse, you see how it limits what you can do offensively. So maybe I'm leaning Joe. And I think when you guys first started that question, I was thinking, oh, it's Jesse.
Wes, give him a couple more minutes. He may move back to Jesse here if we keep talking about it.
Yeah, Mike, we want to get you out of here on this one. This is a topic that Matt and I were discussing before you got on. But Adrian Autry just finished his first regular season as coach. I know you've been asked this a lot on X in terms of the job that he's been doing. So got to ask you, what you think of his job so far in the regular season. And then if you had to put a grade on it, what would you do?
Oh, he gets an A. This was a tough course he took. This wasn't a gimme course. I mean, and you mentioned where I went to school at the start of this. So if you want to go ahead and throw in your joke now, I'll sit back and wait about the classes I didn't have to take at Carolina. Har, har, har. Now, this isn't, for a first-year head coach, A, you're taking over for a legend. It's already now a tough job, right? Before the season starts, a guy I think you thought would impact the team, Chance Westry, is injured and gone for the year. Your starting center, Naheem McLeod, for the first 14 games, he's your starting center, and then he has a foot injury and he's gone for the year. And I know a lot of people, Syracuse fans, have said, you know, they didn't love Naheem and what he was doing in the early part of the schedule. And I kept telling people, you're going to need him. When you get to the heart of the schedule and you get up against ACC teams that have big guys, you know, Armando Bacot, DJ Burns, Quentin Post, all these bigs, you're going to want Naheem then. That's exactly when they lost him. And then as a rookie head coach to have to deal with team issues, you know, highlighted by Benny Williams, you know, where you're suspending a kid you recruited and then having to ultimately dismiss him. you know, that's the head coaching part of the job that they don't talk about, you know, that like, oh, it's all X's and O's and who you sub and when you call timeouts, and then it's not. And then it's other stuff. And, you know, he's guided this team to 20 regular season wins. It's their first 20 regular season campaign since 2014. You know, we have to remember, too, this is a program that didn't go to the NCAA tournament the last 2 years. He didn't take over a program that you could say was on the upswing. So, you know, you just talked about the two guys they lost. They lost Joe Girard and Jesse Edwards. I mean, that's the other thing, too. You know, last year's team won 17 games with those guys.
Sure.
He won 20. That's a really, really good season. And I think he has grown into the job, and I think a young team has grown. And we'll see, you know, if he can keep most of these guys together. I mean, we're all assuming Judah probably enters the draft. But, you know, how many, you know, I want to see a team grow. And I know that's old school these days, right? You know, nobody buys the groceries and cooks their own dinner anymore, like Bill Parcells did. It's like it's all takeout and Uber Eats in college basketball these days. That's the portal.
I've never heard it explained more succinctly and clearly about the day and age we are in college basketball and college sports in general. Mike Waters, nobody knows Syracuse basketball better than him. Syracuse.com, you can always check him out there. He's mouthing, I don't know about that, but he's up there. I think it's Jim Boeheim and Mike Waters, something along those lines there. We'll see how far the gap is between those two, but right up there on the rankings. So, Mike, we really appreciate the time, and good luck the rest of the way here, whether it be just one more week or maybe a couple more weeks of Syracuse basketball. We'll find out shortly. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for having me on, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast, Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. Matt, for my closing thought today, I wanted to throw it to the Wayback Machine on this day exactly 20 years ago. So that's March 7, 2004. Jerry McNamara scores 24 points as number 24 Syracuse knocks off number 7 Connecticut, 67-56 for its fourth straight win. Hakeem Warrick with 19 points, and I would be remiss if I didn't say that Josh Pace, my favorite, finishes with 5 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists, along with 0 turnovers. People ask me why Josh Pace was my favorite player on that 2003 team. Well, that's why. And I was looking at that Connecticut roster, Matt, and we were talking about this before the show. Absolutely stacked. Emeka Okafor, Josh Boone, Hilton Armstrong, Ben Gordon, Charlie Villanueva. That's 5 guys all with NBA experience all in one roster. So it was a really impressive win for Syracuse, who only had one NBA guy on that roster in Hakeem Warrick.
I don't know if this is sacrilege to say, Wes, as much as Syracuse fans hate UConn, it was always one of those teams I really respected. They always seemed to have those stacked line. You go through the years, Rip Hamilton, Caron Butler, Khalid El-Amin, all the guys you just mentioned as well. It was Jim Calhoun, one of the greats also, like you knew you couldn't like them. But you knew if you weren't a Syracuse fan, you probably would like them. And that's a credit to the program, a credit to the rivalry over the years, too, with Syracuse and UConn. It's not something we see anymore. And UConn is, you know, at the top of the game that last year, this year. Hurley's got a good thing going over in Storrs, Connecticut these days, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3 head coaches with 3 national titles. Now, I know you can make the argument that Kevin Ollie didn't really earn that national title, but the fact is that he was head coach when they won. And I remember you mentioned Khalid El-Amin. That actually brought up another name for me, Jake Voskal, which is not a name that you hear very often. Of course, Ray Allen. I mean, it's great teams came through there.
You go up and down the list. And it's good to see Kevin Ollie, now the Brooklyn Nets interim head coach at this point. Wes, my final thought has absolutely nothing to do about sports, and I'm glad you brought it to my attention. It was in on Syracuse.com recently. It's a very poignant topic at this time of year in Central New York. I also looked, it was an article very similar to this in 2018 as well, so good to see that times have not changed. The article basically said that Syracuse, New York is the worst city, or the number one city, however you want to look at it, the worst city in the country for dating. you know, they ask why. I'm going to harken back to our Syracuse days, Wes. I wouldn't say my dating career was very successful in Syracuse, New York. I blame mostly my face, but you know, there are probably some other reasons. And the thing that sticks to me is it's just so damn cold in Syracuse that people are more concerned about layering during the 6 months of winter. Although, was it not 70 degrees over the weekend in Syracuse? That was pretty nice to see. But we're more concerned about layering than we are about tanning and bikini season. Bikini season, like 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken, in Syracuse. And before you even ask, no, I don't wear bikinis, okay? I have much more respect. I go straight one pieces. Thank you very much. But, you know, the focal point of the city is the school, for the most part. So maybe it's not all that bad for the students in their dating lives, but to be part of the Gen Pop in Syracuse, New York, it's tough. It's tough during those winters. Wes, I don't know if you have any dating insight. This may be the only time I ever ask you for dating insight, but you know, any expertise you have to the subject, I'm all ears.
I think you're, to your point, there's the student population, which makes up kind of the majority of the available pool, and because they're transient, because they only spend either, you know, 2 years as a grad student or 4 years as an undergrad and they're gone, that probably has something to do with it. But, you know, to your point, California or Florida, who wants to live there? The winters in Syracuse are the best 8 months out of the year. So layer up, guys.
Lake effect snow. That's the term. That's the term that we need right there. So congratulations, Syracuse, New York. I don't know whether that's the right way to term it, but Syracuse.com thinks it's the number one worst city in the country for dating. Do with that what you will. No finer way to end another edition of the Juice on the Cues podcast, Wes. So we're just going to leave it right there. Thank you to all who are listening, still listening, even after that last 3 minutes of beautiful podcast creation. Thank you for listening on the Believe Network and on Rivals. Tune in again here. It's ACC tournament time for the Syracuse basketball team. We'll see how it all shakes out. For Wes Chang, I'm Matt D'Agostino. Appreciate you tuning in.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.